love you back. Stay tuned every Wednesday at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 8:30 Pacific, with your host, Boyd and Lucinda, for the hottest talk show in existence. The streets don't love you back. I gotta do right before they call
me home. Good evening and welcome to the Streets Don't Love You Back show. Today is April 25th, 2012. I'm your host, Lucinda, with my co-host, Boyd. And our topic is, as always, the Streets Don't Love You Back. Join us every Wednesday night with real people, real stories, and real changes as we hear the truth about gangs, drugs, violence, abuse, and other life issues. We have a great show for you tonight. We have Miss Marlene Lynn Fields. She was born in Minot, North Dakota. She was born a sickly child with emphysema and an enlarged heart. She wasn't expected to live past 5 years of age, but at the age of 9, she outgrew those illnesses. She became an outstanding student and began in gymnastics competition and theatrical production. She has accomplished being a multi-talented actress, scriptwriter, pop singer, composer, director, editor, cinematographer, and much more. We're going to hear her story tonight about her life and her successes. And before we do that, let me welcome Boyd to the show.
Yes, everyone. I just want to thank everyone for tuning in every Wednesday night. And we thank you for your continued support. And without further ado, we're going to pass the mic over and let Ms. Lanfield formally introduce herself. And I would like to say thank you for coming on the show and spreading your message. And you can formally introduce yourself to the fans.
Well, thank you so much. I've been very excited all day to be on the show. I actually logged on at 8:30 this morning. And I realized it was 8:30 p.m. I'm over here on the Pacific Standard Time over in California. And Lucinda, that was Minot, North Dakota, where I was born. And I'm thrilled to be on the show. Thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you again. You know, what we would like to do is for you to start off telling the fans, you know, how was it growing up? And where did the abuse start in your life?
Okay. I was the only daughter to, I have two brothers. I was in the middle. And my father was a part Bulgarian. And, you know, their whole heritage in the Bulgarian family is that the male sons are, you know, predominantly the structure of the family. And so I was also the littlest one in my family because I was sick and different things. And it might have stemmed from that. But my abuse started at about 8 years old, but we actually have videotape of me as a toddler, like 1 and 2 years old, and my dad is giving me just the worst looks and won't pick me up. And so what I endured was 28 years of excessive verbal abuse. I was told to shut up every time I was in the room. I was sentenced to go to my room. I was never allowed to sit with him. He never told me I was beautiful or talented or smart. I was not allowed to speak to my father for 28 years. And it was a very, very painful situation. People would come in as they got older into high school, and they would say, my God, you know, he'll say hello to everyone walking in the door except me. And so the types of abuse that went on is, I got a scholarship to college on my gymnastics and my academics, and I was called a liar, that there's no way I would get a scholarship. And so there was always just a very, very foul language every single day of my life. I was accused of, I would come home from school and I would be, I was little, I was like 11 or 12 years old, and I would be accused of being in the bushes with the boys. And I would say, you know, Daddy, I'm not in any bushes. And he would say, quit lying to him and get to my room. That he saw me, he knows it was me that was in these bushes with these boys. And so I would go to my room, and I was very angry. I had a great deal of hate in my heart toward my dad these years. And I would, first I would run around the room, or I would do hundreds of sit-ups just over and over and over. And this turned into being a good training for me because I became such a top athlete, which led to my success, early success in the film industry. But then I would also, finally I would relax, and I would just kick things. I would kick and punch in the room like I was kicking and punching him. And I put into my studies then, I would wear myself out so much because the rest of the family was all downstairs watching TV and having dinner, and there I was in my room, locked in again, and just studying then or doing these sit-ups or running laps in the backyard. And so it was a very, it was just incredibly lonely and painful. We made amends once I, my mom and he separated, and he said he was coming to visit one day, and I'll tell you, I was frightened. I was scared to death that after he'd never spoken to me, but once my mom left him 28 years later, he went to therapy, and they said, why don't you ever discuss your daughter? You tell us all about your sons. And so he called to make amends, and we did become friends. I never mentioned to him. I never said how you treated me was terrible. I just became his friend, and that was a wonderful thing, to have the forgiveness and never throw it in his face. And we went to a lot of dinners, and he would then switch and say, how's my beautiful daughter? And I was older then, you know, into my 30s now. But it was rough.
And the advice you would give other young ladies that's going through that same thing right now with their parents, what advice would you give them right now?
Well, I would absolutely tell them to talk to someone. See, there was a slight attempted rape from my father on his birthday one day when my mom was gone. And I got away from him. I was real agile. So from that day forward, I was told to shut up. And he intimidated me and battered me, even though no rape took place. Okay, and I'm being really, really honest and blunt for your readers. I kept this in until I was well in my 30s. I never discussed it with anyone. And, you know, he just kind of pulled my blouse up, and I screamed, I'm scared. No, and threatened me that if I didn't cooperate, just really terrible. And so I ran out, and I remember sitting on the step waiting for my mom. And I was like 11 or 12, maybe even 10. And so from that day forward, I was told to shut up every time I was in the room. And when he got sick of seeing me, he would make me go sit out on the step, and everybody else is in, and I'm behind the screen. And I'd have to, and I knew he was mad because of that. But then he would go on to continue. Threatened me, and when his birthday would come, that was his birthday that day, and he said, I will beg him for it, and that I owe him a birthday present. And then every year his birthday would come, we'd be sitting around the table having dinner, and he would say, you owe me my birthday present. And I would just freeze. This day, I shake and feel someone's going to scream at me. It was a tremendous amount to overcome because I still in my soul think I'm going to get yelled at every minute, I'm going to this. But I would say rather than keep it in, to find a school counselor or someone. And now I know a lot of the wives, they won't leave them in. And my mom was not in any condition where she could leave him. And there were also two boys. but it was the worst childhood that I've never known of anyone to have this kind of humiliation and yelling and four-letter names and never allowed to speak. And so they should talk to someone, I think. I don't think you could hold it in for over 30 years like I did just because the man is threatening them.
Right, and it's amazing because you say it was your real father that tried this attempt rape.
This is my real father, yes. And he was a genius. He was a singer and a square dance caller, and he became an inventor. And he was, at 17, I became his secretary, and I'd ride to work with him, but there was no talk. And he taught me a lot about scheduling, about writing letters, and he, you know, the greatest thing he taught me, I would say, was his scheduling, because he would take a yellow notepad. He was an aircraft, a designer in aircraft, and had a business and always worked. He was a really hard worker. He went to work every day. He was never abusive towards my mother. He was wonderful, and he was overly supportive to my older brother. The sun rose and set in my older brother's every word. People wouldn't come over anymore because all he talked about was how great my older brother was. Now, he smoked very heavy, and he drank beer every night and sat in the chair, but he was home every night. He was just, you know, and even very, very difficult to talk about. I've never, ever discussed it.
Wow. You know, do you think that he held anything against you for being such a sickly child when you were young?
Well, I think it could have been that, and I also think the Bulgarian heritage. He came from an abusive home, and he had a lot of frustrations. He became very successful later in life. After 60, and by then my mom had left him, and he had had things in school where they said they voted him, he'd be the biggest loser, and he had, my dad was very clean, and he liked really nice things. He always went out and got a Cadillac or a nice car, and I loved this about him. He was really handsome, but there were stories. He was raped by the maid as a little boy. The girls all turned out to be whores. I mean, it was just, you can't believe the dialogue. There was never any intelligent dialogue going on in the evening hours when you get home from school. It was every four-letter word from the minute I walked in the door. The worst names you can think to call a female from the minute I would walk in the door. And just always rebellious and fighting. And it was the most unhealthy environment for someone like me because I'm such a peaceful person. So I think that the abusiveness was then an egotistical thing. When he died and they went over the will, they said, this is what a chauvinist your father was, when always had a problem with me.
Wow. So the cycle that he went through continued with you. Now, what about your younger brother?
Well, now, my younger brother, he was 5 years younger than me and 6 years younger than my older brother. He never got any kind of spankings or any kind of reprimanding. My dad had changed and mellowed somewhat. Now, I want to present the good and the bad with my father. And another one of the good things was that he really believed in baseball and sports. So he and my older brother, they would take me to the park every Saturday, like at 8 o'clock in the morning, and they would meet me the pickle, and they would throw and play catch and stuff. And so that me being the pickle, and then they'd laugh because I could never get to the base in time, and they'd laugh, and you know, they loved me. I know they loved me, but they would play these games. And so my older brother took on the personality of my father. And my older brother has always been incredibly verbally abusive to me to this day. And going back 3 years, I had to end the association because I could never see my older brother without being told, sit down, shut the F up, listen to me. And, you know, it just, you know, you grow. And so finally in 2009, I walked away from both of my brothers because of an inheritance issue. And because of how abusive, you know, the whole, my brother's wives and them, they seemed to think that they could treat me the way that my dad did.
Wow. That's, you know, I don't know why, and I can see that it's kind of like maybe heritage. He, you know, if that's the way his family treated him, that's all he knew. But at some point, as an adult, you have to know that that's not right. And especially to treat your daughter that way, you know, much less a son. But nevertheless, there are people that talk like that and use four-letter words every other word.
And there's children today in your programs, and they're being hit and beat up and treated even maybe worse, maybe not every day like mine was with the, you know, shut up in the silence and get to your room. And I'm not exaggerating. There was not one kind word for 28 years. Even, you know, and if I tried to touch him, he would throw me away. Now, it just, you know, push my arm away or say something. And there were times where, give your dad a kiss, come and give your dad a kiss. So I'm a little girl and, you know, come over here and give me a kiss. And, you know, the GD word then in there. So I'd go over and give him a kiss, and he'd lay a great big giant French kiss on me. And I'm a little girl, and, you know, just really humiliating.
So, I mean, that is, in a way, sexual abuse. I mean, for a father to give him a French kiss. So whether or not he did, you know, and he attempted rape, but if he didn't actually rape you, but still those types of things and the verbal abuse is sometimes way worse than physical or sexual abuse.
Yeah, because his last words as I was running away that day I got away from him was, you'll beg me for it. And so then the abuse started because I guess he thought if he abused me that I don't know what went on in his household as a young boy. Now, what I honestly feel is that, you know, people thought that my mom was mentally ill, but my dad, I mean, this is not normal. I believe my father was incredibly mentally ill. We would drive, just very angry and frustrated, we would drive and a cat would go across in an alley. My dad would get out of the car and break the cat's neck.
Wow.
And I would just cringe. And I couldn't stand this. Now, they say a cat tried to smother him when he was little. So he would break the cat's neck whenever there was a cat around. And to watch a human being doing this as a young girl was so frightening to me. And then he would take us to the drive-in to really bad, like R-rated and almost X-rated movies. And when I would cry and say, I don't want to watch it, he would say, shut up and watch it. And then he smoked heavy, and when I would say, could we please roll the window down, I can't breathe, he would say, shut up and smell it.
Wow. And you have the emphysema as a young child. That would be, a caring parent would not want that to even be around their child.
Right. Yeah, and so how does a kid, a little girl, defend herself? She can't. And so I just learned to people please, and I never spouted off. I went to my room, and I vented it into the sit-up. I mean, there were nights I would do 300, 500 sit-ups. I would run in the backyard till my legs were going to collapse, And then I became put it into my books. And so we'd take car rides, vacation, and I would study. And then they would have to tell me to get away from the table as I got older because I would. But it all paid off, and it's like there was a protection around me because I was able to do gymnastics. I think the balance act that the gymnastics took helped me cope with what had gone on by focusing so strongly.
Are you there?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I lost you for a second. So, yeah, I think you put all of your physical efforts and everything into your gymnastics to be able to kind of get away from thinking about all the other stuff, and that made you a better athlete, a better gymnast. But to go through those horrible things, I'm just feel so sorry that you had to go through all of that. I hate for any child to go through those things, especially the name calling and the intimidation from you know, a big brute man that can be scary.
Yeah. And my boyfriends, whenever I would try to have a boyfriend, he would insult them or do something. And, oh, I'd walk in the door. I was a young girl, and I've never been promiscuous. And he would say, oh, and this is just terrible, but I think that the people listening, the more honest I can be, the more they can realize. He would say, if it was something like, if you had as many sticking out of you as you've had stuck in you, you'd look like a porcupine.
Uh-huh.
And I would just cringe. I mean, this guy was so out of control with, he just didn't care, and he didn't care his whole life what anybody thought. And my brothers have inherited, and I want to say that there's a lot of fond memories for the cleanliness in the house. It was spotless. They cooked well, my mom and dad. The organization was a big gift that came to me, but it was just really a hell house every single day and every evening especially. And he and my older brother, as my older brother got older, they would get into it in the hallway and start to duke it out. And I mean, I just can't imagine. You know how kids that are adopted or living with step-parents, they think, what would it be like with my real dad? Well, I would think, wouldn't it be nice if the teacher was my dad and we all sat there and, you know, everybody, like, there was no religion in my house. I found religion myself at 46 years old. I'd never been in a church because my dad said God was in his beer can.
Wow.
And, you know, so I was so thrilled at 46 because it's helped me. And then I thought, you know, it would have been so nice, especially with the IQ and intellect that I have and what I do today, if I would have had somebody that would have, you know, really cared about me and talked to me in the right way.
Right. So I know you gained a lot from them, like you said, with the organization and the cleanliness and the, you know, your dad was smart. Obviously, you got some of your smartness from your parents, you know, because you've overcame and you've succeeded in a lot of different areas. But, you know, you still, like you said, you missed the religion. You missed the loving part of growing up in a family, the security of and the comfort, you know, of your parents. What did your mom do all those times when your dad, I mean, did she not feel bad, cringe, say, honey, I'm sorry, or did she talk to you like that as well?
No, my mom did not talk to me the same way my dad did. And my mom she was very sweet, but it was never mentioned. It was never discussed. They were not able to stand up to him. See, if my brother or my mom or somebody would have said, hey, shut up, quit treating her that way, then they would have had, he would have started punching on them. His my grandpa was a boxer, and, you know, so it was never mentioned. And I just went to my room, if it was going to make a little things better so that they could all have fun down there. We had a two-story, and they could all watch TV. Then I would go up and sit in my room and look over on the stairs and watch them down there. Or I'd sit out on the step and peek through the screen to see what they were doing. And, you know, just always isolated. My mom, we found out that she was schizophrenic. And we found that out in the early 90s. So my mom never spoke much. And she was the type of mom, I just thought she was the best listener in the world, because she would always say, uh-huh. And when I'd ask, what would you do? What should I do about this decision I've got to make? She would say, well, gee, I can't make that decision for you. You'll have to make it yourself. I wouldn't want someone making that decision. You need to learn to make your own decisions. Well, I've kind of raised my mom. She's very ill. She's... and we've always been very, very close, and she's gentle like me. She doesn't use this kind of language. She's got a lot of grace and self-control. And when my dad acted this way, nobody did anything.
Wow. So you said that he was not abusive towards her. She just knew better, and she didn't argue with him or anything.
Right. Now, there was one night they had a fight, and he went to hit her, but she slid down the refrigerator before he had a chance to slap her in the face. But they basically, my dad worshipped my mom. He treated her very, very good. And I had, through these years, I had a real closeness with my younger brother, who, when he turned 16, now I want to also mention, you know, I was born with the emphysema, and I was told to never smoke, and they all have been heavy smokers. I mean, 3 and 4 packs. My dad died of lung cancer. 3 and 4 packs a day. There was so much smoke in that household, and I feel that this excessive smoking was part of the problem that led to these personality frustrations. You can't put that many cigarettes in your body every day and feel good.
Right, exactly.
You know, it speeds you up. And
the alcohol as well. If you're drinking every night, too, that deteriorates your body.
Yeah, he'd have a 6-pack of beer and the or more. Before he died, he was drinking very, very heavily. But I'll talk a minute about my younger brother. And he was my saving grace growing up. We were very close. I loved him dearly. Because he was very, very sweet. We got along. He was very clever and smart. And but my older brother, when my parents were gone, he would lock me out of the house. And when I'd knock, try to get in, he'd reach his fist out and slug me in the face.
Wow.
So there was a lot of physical abuse from my old brother would pin me down and say he's going to make me tough, and he would slug me in the legs. And he did this, my older brother did this, he was a football player and stuff, and he did this to all the kids that came over. Now, my younger brother, he was very talented and very, my mom and my brothers, my dad, very, very attractive, far more attractive than the average, you know, 6-foot-tall and slender and just really, really had it all. But at 16 years old, my brother threw pot plants, seeds out in the backyard and started growing marijuana plants. And, you know, we all tried a little bit of the marijuana, but it stopped there because I was 22 and he was 16 or 21. And so then one day I go to visit and he's sitting in the back seat now, and he's been to college and he's home for Christmas, and he pulls a bunch of pills out of his pocket and he starts pushing ecstasy and LSD And I'm looking at the biggest creep now that I've ever met. He's only 18 years old or 19. I'm in my early 20s. And now my younger brother, who I adored, has become the biggest drug pusher. And so through the years, I've watched him deal drugs, go on the crack cocaine, just all of it, you name it. It's really, really sad. They know I'm anti-drug, and I've always been anti-drugs because I was a top stunt. I was the original fall girl in the early 70s, the middle 70s. I had many series at the different studios performing all of the very difficult stunts, the high falls and the high dives. And so there was no way I could do drugs and have that career. So there's always been a conflict because my ex-brother feels he should be able to do as many drugs as he wants to do. And there again, got listeners that are having people. And, so I want to tell the story he was pushing ecstasy so much. Every time you see him, you got to try ecstasy. It's the love drug. You feel like you're in love. It's the best. So he got me thinking, I'm going to call him and I'm going to try ecstasy. Then that very night, to show you the protection around me again, I turn on the television and people trying ecstasy, they're ending up paraplegics in wheelchairs, crippled and with shakes. This is, it's a designer drug, and they can't guarantee what is in it. And so the best advice I could give is anybody pushing stuff on you. I've actually called the police on my brother. They haven't done anything. And someday I expect to turn on the news, and he's one of the biggest drug dealers in Ventura County. And there, he will have finally got his comeuppance. But, these people, this is why what you guys are doing is so great, because they're out there on the streets and they talk them into it. They talk them into it, saying it'll be so great, it'll feel so good. And it's a downer. It is a one-way street down doing drugs.
That's for sure. Yeah, you can't continue using drugs or even alcohol, for a long period of time and be a great success, because you're going to find yourself in trouble or doing the wrong things, making the wrong decisions, just doing the wrong things. And with these drugs nowadays, you don't even know what's in some of the stuff, with the crystal meth and the just all the different things that they're lacing the marijuana with. And, you don't know what you're getting. One time heroin hits can kill you. One time meth, hits can kill you. There's just so many things that are so dangerous. And if people would only realize what they're doing before they make those decisions, we would save a lot of lives out here.
Yeah, and, when I turned on the show that night and I saw people experimenting with ecstasy are ending up in a wheelchair, all crippled over, or they can't walk up the street without, being buckled over and creepy walk. And I was like, God, it scared me to death. It scared me enough, but I had studied hell, and I had been in college, and I had been to the alcoholic centers. And they said, 10 years old, I had my first drink. And it was, it was really sad and it was really pathetic, but I was also dealing with it at home because I'd call from college and my dad would pick up and he would say something really, nasty and sexual. And then he would say that he's sitting there getting drunk and, whatever.
Mm. That's amazing how, your real father is the individual who do this, and there's so many real fathers that do that to their daughters and to their kids. They rape their own little sons and stuff. So it's just pathetic on how things really go down in America and across the country. And we have to be so aware and so educated about these incidents, because a lot of time when kids tell their parents are straight up and say, "Oh, that didn't happen to you. You must have looked at it in another way." But these things really go on, and we need the parent to, listen to the child if they come to you and tell you daddy doing this or auntie or uncle doing this, because it do goes on and we all know it go on. So let's try to help save these kids from this kind of abuse and make things a better situation and better household for these young kids.
Yes, and to, you know, try to educate the parents. If you know, and also the children should have somewhere to go. They have to be able to go somewhere, because if they go home and the parent is on drugs and, you know, really becoming violent, there has to be some kind of situation going on where they have a way out. They can text someone, another family member, until that parent comes down off those drugs or off that alcohol, but also more PTA meetings where they're sitting with the parents and they're saying, this is how to talk to the children. Because there's a, you know, I actually find that there's a tremendous amount of ignorance. I don't understand why there's all this violence and arguing going on in households when there could be such, you know, playing games together and praying together, singing and dancing and playing musical instruments, going to movies they like. You know, why is everybody on everyone's case and causing so much stress? And I can honestly say this, and this is what I tell my mom, is that, you know, I have never picked a fight. I'm somebody that has never walked around saying, I'm going to get this person, I'm going to cause them hell today. And there's literally people out there that want to make other people's lives miserable on a regular basis. And why? You know, and so these people need help, whether it's chemical imbalance or manic depression. My dad definitely had something wrong, but who's going to tell him? Change, you know, he thinks it makes him tough. It made him strong. And, I mean, he fought with everybody. There was every minute of every day of his life.
Mm. Well, we definitely, you know, glad that you came on the show and definitely spreading the message to others to let people aware of what goes down in households across here. And we just wanted to say that to you, and I'll pass the mic to the missus.
Thank you.
What happened to your mom? Why did she finally leave him, and what happened to her after she left him?
Okay, in 1985, she'd been married 35 years, and she had a tumor removed from her stomach for a surgical procedure. And she lost consciousness on the operating table, and they had to pump her heart. So I feel that this was part of it. Now, one of the reasons that I think she was so quiet all those years is that she kept hearing shut up also. And I have a really scary situation that happened. So I was married, and my mom left, and she had lived in my apartment building, and then we moved, and she moved in with my husband and I. And I would go upstairs in the room, and my mom would be cussing herself out. She would be calling herself a dumb, you know, B-I-T-C-H, these words that we were called. And I walked in on her one day, and I was absolutely shocked that she was using those words. So maybe when they were alone, he called her that, or she heard him call me that so much it sunk in. But she was never, my mom was so talented, both of my parents, a lot of talent. And my mom, she could bake anything, the best chicken, and things. So I watched her start to become more and more homeless. And then my husband became abusive towards my mother, which is why I ended up leaving him. I'd only been married a couple years to this man. And my mom took a mattress off the bed and put it in the garage. And she started sleeping in the garage because my husband had made her so uncomfortable in the house. I was working nights, and I didn't know, but when I would leave, he would accuse her of not getting a job. She was getting a job, and everyone was yelling at her to get a job. Well, we didn't know, but they diagnosed it as a viral schizophrenia and someone who would never be able to work out in the public sector. So she hitchhiked in 91 from California to Oregon. And I found her 6 months later. She was bone skinny and sitting on the side of a road. And she was completely homeless. She had told me she was getting $180 a week and not to worry. So I went up to bring her home. She didn't want to come home. She didn't want any more to do with any of us. Well, this ended up going on for 9 years until one day, actually 1 week after my Christian baptism, my mom was found using a different name with multiple, she was riddled with cancers, brain cancer and breast cancer, and they didn't think she'd live, and they were looking for next of kin, and they traced her to my original missing persons report in 91, which is just marvelous, that the missing person reports, they get into the computer system.
Right.
And so she's been under my care. I saved my mom 12 years ago, and she's cancer-free. She's severely disabled now. The brain cancer and the radiation caused her to go blind. She's bedridden. She can't use her legs. And she lives with me, though, and I take care of her. And it's just a beautiful story that my mom is still here.
Wow. You know, I have to go back to the beginning of your story. You know, I think your mom did maybe get some of that from listening to your father all those years, but I think a bigger part of it is the schizophrenia, because it does cause them to say a lot of things, and I'm not sure if they're aware of it or what, but they do say a lot of things, and they repeat a lot of things. And I mean, schizophrenia is a really scary disease if you don't have it under control.
Yes, and she didn't have it managed. And the smoking is also an indication of schizophrenia, I've learned, as we were actually trying to sell my mom's screenplay that I've written. And I've spoken to the counselors and stuff, and heavy smoking or heavy drug use can turn into schizophrenia, that people doing a lot of cocaine or crack, they can have that same kind of hallucinatory, anxiousness and out of touch with reality that a schizophrenic person is having. By doing these types of drugs, it can lead to that sort of schizophrenic behavior where they then need medication management to get normal again. And that's what, if alcoholics and these people could realize and look at themselves, why are they doing it to their own, you know, body? The body is supposed to be there for life, and if they take care of it, it's going to last. And so if they could, would only know that alcoholics can be cured, they can be put on something in the hospital and they can get better, but the person has to be able to substitute the negative behavior with a positive behavior and a positive, and with, you know, low self-esteem. I mean, I had the lowest self-esteem, and both my brothers have become, you know, went into the drugs and alcohol and the heavy smoking, and you know, I didn't, and thank God. I mean, I'm just fortunate. I haven't had a craving for it. I think that, and then once you put it in your body, if they only knew, you'll start to crave it. And then I always go back to that Huey Lewis song, I Want a New Drug, one that doesn't make it. And once they start up the drug cycle, it's a never-ending thing. They never feel as good. And it brings them down. It destroys their mind and their soul and their memory. All of these things kill brain cells. And, you know, if they could just realize that, and if they could learn to replace it with better behavior.
Right.
But, yes, my mom being so silent those years, when we found her in the shelter, they said, well, what was she like growing up? Did she talk? I said, she never said anything. She just agreed, and yes. And he said, that's one of the signs of the schizophrenia also. They're scared to speak because they maybe someone's told them, you know, that what they said was crazy, or they know that they their brain isn't functioning. And my mom was a foster child and lived in foster homes from the time she was 3 until she was 8.
Wow.
And then at 8 till 17, she lived in one family. But this collapse of the family structure at 3 years old can also destroy a child and lead to schizophrenia and these sorts of things.
Right, definitely. It can lead to all kinds of things. Let me go back. I have one question for you, though. What in the world made your husband think that he could disrespect your mother like that?
Well, he disrespected me, too. It's kind of a cycle, you know, and a lot of these guys, he was in the Army, and he, we don't really know what his issues were. My ex-husband, he traveled months and then would be home on a weekend, and he would come in the door angry. Now, I was his second wife, and he was 4 years younger than me, and I was in my late 20s. And he would come in angry. Well, his first wife left him for the same reason. He would come in angry after being gone for 6 weeks, and then he would sit in the chair and pout. And so one day she called, and we had a stepson, and she said, "Does he come in the door angry?" I said, "He does." And she left him. That's the exact same reason. But he, you know, that wasn't the person for me to be married to. When I would go on an acting audition, I would come home, and I was very successful for 12 years before a car accident took some of my talent and caused me to make career changes. They would come in the door and go, "Oh, I bet you blew them away with that one." And, you know, here I'm a really seriously trained and educated actress and ex-stunt lady with a lot of education and very serious about what I'm doing. And you can't go on these readings when there's 800 people competing or 100 people competing for the same role, or you're down to the last date or the last two, and then you come home to a man that says, "Boy, I bet you blew him away with that one." Yeah, you know, you've got to have somebody that recognizes your talent and recognizes what you've put into it. And it's a hard enough career. But his mother then, she would pull me aside at Thanksgiving dinners. And because I didn't show off and show her my demo reels, everyone would, you know, be in the other room and we'd be in the kitchen. And she would say, "Well, you must not be any good or you would have shown us something." And she would put a curse on me. She would say, "I don't see you making it. I do not see it happening in your future." And I'm like, you know, she's going to, and this brings me to the most important point to tell your listeners and the young children, God is the one in charge of your life and you trusting God. People will try to say, like my ex-mother-in-law, "You'll never make it." And look at me today. I've got screenplays. I've been 5 times as a pop singer and ASCAP composer on the music internet charts. I've appeared in 100 film and television shows. I've got 6 motion picture screenplays. I have CDs. I have a company. I'm acting in several web series and still audition, incessantly. I've got nonfiction books. And it's because I something got me out of bed every day to do something with my life. Just ever since those sit-ups and studying in the bedroom, something made me never stop. And if I'm someone who can never stop with such low self-esteem and lack of confidence with, you know, complete fear of what went on. And so no matter what anyone tells you, if you want to write a song, if these kids, you know, any of your kids, they want to write, sit down and write the song. And if somebody says they don't like the song, it doesn't matter. You wrote the song. God gave you these gifts and these talents to do something with your life. And God did not put, and this is the argument I have with my brother, my younger drug addict, drug dealing brother, is God did not put you on this earth to push a lot of drugs and bring your soul down. God wants us to lift ourselves and those around us and in our spirits and be strong enough to be a voice that says that's not acceptable. And do the right thing, you know, and somebody has to be strong enough.
Right.
And, you know, that's what we need more of, I feel.
Right. And kids need to understand, too, though, that there might be a person that's negative and says you can't do this or that, but, you know, that who is that person to tell you that you can't achieve something? And for goodness sakes, get away from the negative people and find some positive people. Find people that are looking to do better things in life and get away from the negative people.
That is so true. That is it exactly. And, like, you know, I was always called an F-up. My dad, and you know, an F up with the F word, and you're an F up, and you know, I wasn't. I was on the honor roll, and I was head of my high school pep squad, and I was on a homecoming princess twice, and you know, but he just would for homecoming, I went and got an updo, and because I didn't wear my hair down. There was an argument, and then he wouldn't take pictures of me, and so there was. It didn't matter what I did. There was all if I cut my hair, I tried to do, you know. So, I walked out of that marriage and that ex mother-in-law because I knew what I can do and what I have, and that woman wasn't going to tell me that she didn't see me making it.
Right. Exactly. You know, I think. People that, you know, like your father and your ex-husband and people like that, it's, you know, no matter what you do or how right it is, they still want to put you down because it's a power and control issue on their end of it. And their negativity is so deep that they can't even find anything positive to say. You know,
yeah.
And it's too bad that there's people really like that.
Yeah, and if you change one thing that they're asking you to change, then they're going to find something else. You know, you change the one thing that they don't like, then they're going to, you know, find something else. So I really agree with you to get away from the negative people. And, you know, if you find your joy, nobody deserves to have their joy taken. Nobody has the right to take another person's joy. And you know, if you find your joy sitting in your room, playing your guitar, listening to your music, or working on the internet or whatever, but I think that we would be a better society all the way around if everyone just would examine their heart and they would say, I'm going to be as honest and good to everyone that I come in contact with from this point. I'm going to really do my best in... I kind of make it a motto each day to do something that for others. How do I do something for other people instead of myself? And I live by this. And I try to go into situations. So many people feel they need to lie or they need to cheat or they need to compete or they need to bring the other guy down. And I'm just so glad where I'm at, and I'm 56. And to be at this point in my life at this point and to know that, you know, we're all equal. Like my younger brother's wife, she feels no one in the room can say anything but her. But we all have ideas, and we all should be able to contribute. And if everyone would stop and listen to what the other guy is coming up with, so much more, you know, and just to get rid of the hate and all those negative emotions in the heart.
Right. Exactly.
And how do you do it? You know, how do you, can you answer that? You know, you have children coming in, they're angry, they don't want to change. How do you get them to turn around?
You know, I don't know. How do we break that cycle? You know, obviously you've broken the cycle for, I don't know if you have children or not, but you broke the cycle for you. You know, we need to break that cycle of negativity and of abusiveness and, you know, so that our children, the generations down after us don't have to go through some of the things that we went through before. And a lot of that is bringing it out in the open and talking about it. You know, when we were growing up,
you know, if you were abused, it was something that you didn't talk about. It wasn't until years later that, you know, now our children are taught if somebody touches you inappropriately here, here, or here, you better let me know about it. You better let somebody know about it because it's wrong.
Yeah, I like it.
Exactly. So, you know, I just, things are more open now. But then again, if you have that low self-esteem, sometimes you're still afraid to talk to somebody, or if you're threatened, you're still afraid to talk to somebody. But the bottom line is out there. If anybody of you, you know, is going through any kind of abuse, whether it's verbal, physical, emotional, financial, talk to somebody, get some help, because there's plenty of support groups, there's plenty of women that have gone through the same thing that you're going through. There's plenty of young girls, young boys who have gone through that cycle, who have been abused, who've gotten out of it, who've gotten help, who can help. And, you know, the biggest thing is to tell somebody, to talk to somebody about it. You know, those 30 years of keeping secrets cause mental and emotional problems as, you know, for adults. If they hold all that in for all these years.
I never even thought to talk to somebody. It wasn't till well into my 30s I even ever mentioned what I'm mentioning today. And then I want to mention that, I mean, maybe 3 or 4 times other than tonight, it's not something that I've discussed. And I've still kept it quiet because of the shut up, and I didn't know who to turn to, and it never crossed my mind to tell anyone or to even, you know, bring it forward, go to the counselor. I never even crossed my mind to go get help. I was just so sure that that was my life and that's what I was supposed to endure, because I was so little when it started.
Right. That's all you knew. You thought it was normal.
That's all I knew. I knew something was wrong. I knew it wasn't right to, and it troubled me deeply as a little girl. It troubled me, and I knew that it just wasn't, he wasn't all there. You just don't do that to anybody. I got that far with it, but I still overlooked and accepted in an understanding way that he had a problem without agitating. I made sure that I, you know, didn't put, you know, add to the flame with attitude and bad behavior. I went the other direction.
Right. Well, you went in the positive direction, and even though they tried to hold you down and talk down at you, you went ahead and you exerted another thing, because you, I think, kind of just put your whole mindset on, I'm going to do something different and positive no matter what. And I think that's how you became successful and overcame all of that. And I'm glad that you're able to take care of your mother.
Yeah, she's great. She's very sweet, and she's very ill. You know, you can't be homeless 9 years and then schizophrenia and cancers, multiple cancers, and be well, you know. So she's got dementia and Alzheimer and just a...
Right.
But she did quit smoking. She quit smoking with the gum and my help. And the gum, if people will know that the electronic cigarettes and the gum don't put the chemical in, you know, I just can't. Oh, I know what crossed my mind a minute ago that I wanted to say, that was that I've learned through the years and wish they would have taught me in school, was if everyone could kind of get a feel for logic and practical choices, because so many things come at us in life and so many people, and if we could, you know, learn young. It really should be a course taught on it at school, early school, like in 7th or 8th grade. I got the drug and alcohol course, so I got scared. I was like, I don't want to do it, because they showed the liver, they showed the smoking, they showed the lungs all brown, and they showed, you know, and so it really, really stayed with me. Well, what would be great is if there was a class on logic to sit with. See, what I do today now in all of my affairs is I spend a great deal of time in prayer and meditation to get the answers that I need, and then I base them on practical, logical progressions. This way things are budgeted for what I need to do, and nothing's out of control. There's a great deal of balance. And
right.
And I think this is important because as kids you got a lot of energy and you get wound up.
Right. Yep. Are you here?
Yeah, I'm here. I couldn't drink my soda.
We're going to be finishing up here with our last few minutes. I'm going to give the mic over to Rob for his last words. And then before we close out tonight, I want you to tell us a little bit about your song, Everybody Hurts, and we're going to play that at the close of our show tonight.
Oh, how wonderful.
I just want to thank you one more time for coming on the show and for sharing your story, and just hoping that somebody listening out there that may have gone through the same thing has gotten something out of it and can reach out to somebody for help.
Yes, I want to thank you, too. I find the whole subject matter and what you guys are doing just absolutely fantastic. And I'm a little apprehensive that I did tell the true, deep, painful things of the story. But I'm really proud that I could. And I do hope that someone will see me as a role model and take my advice for, you know, how to cope with it and how to make better choices in their life. Now, Everybody Hurts, I'm a singer, and I want to be a singer more than anything. That's my favorite thing to do, and I'm also a songwriter. I still act, but it isn't as much after my car accident and things. It's really the music and the script writing that is what I enjoy doing most. And so I was approached by a famous cinematographer, Royden Johnson. I do a lot for charity. I'm involved in, we're trying to start a homeless charity with my mom's story. And then I do a lot with children's charities and children abused children's charities. And this is a charity for the Indonesian children to get a better education. And I wish everyone could see the video. So anyone on your page, if you go to YouTube and you put in my name, Marneen Fields, MarneenFields, you will see the Everybody Hurts video, and you will see these children that are living on the edge of the water with only a sheet for a roof. And you'll see that they are the most poverty-stricken children in Indonesia. So I was asked to record Everybody Hurts. He had heard my voice, and he went down to these regions and photographed the children and the families living there. And they get out of the trash dump, where they take the trash and dump it in the sand and stuff, and that's where they find a book or a shirt, or most of them have no shoes on their feet. And so this is the most honorable and gracious and humbling thing I've ever done in my life, to be the voice of Everybody Hurts for this video. And I'm very, very proud of it.
Definitely, definitely. And once again, we thank you for being on the show, and we're going to go out with your song, Everybody Hurts, and we want to give a big shout-out to the youth council who me and my wife met up with last night right here in our community, and we're going to be working with them, and, you know, we thank everybody in our community that support us and everybody beyond our community that support us. So we just want to thank everybody. Also, you can order both of my books, the Never Hit a Woman book and The Streets Don't Love You Back. You can order that book off our movement page, www.thestreetsdon'tloveyoubackcom. thestreetsdontloveyouback.com, and you can get all information off of there. Also, we have our own store, online store. You can get our clothesline, our hoodies, our shirts, caps, beanies, sweatsuits, and, you know, we're just trying to continue doing work and giving back to these youths and others. So we would like to thank everybody for tuning in every Wednesday right here at our radio show. And we would like for you to give your information out for people who would like to get in touch with you or order your music. You can give them your website or what information you have you would like to give.
Okay, well, I just want to say God bless you both, and everything you're doing is so great. I'm thrilled to be a mentor, and I will definitely be getting the book. I can't wait to read it and all the stories. And for me, the best site to go to help me is the imdb.com, and you type Marnene Fields in there. And every time somebody pulls me up in there, it helps my score and brings me more public. Like Brad Pitt, he's like number one. And, you know, I'm like in the 25,000 out of millions. And then I also have, you can go to the YouTube site or CD Baby store, and I've got some CDs. There's many things. We have 20 projects launching in 2012 and several of my screenplays. And then, of course, I'm on Facebook, so that's the best way to find me. And I just really want to thank you for this wonderful opportunity. I'm in awe of, and everything you're doing is so great.
And we appreciate that, and we appreciate you also becoming a member of the Streets and Love You Back Movement website. And we thank you for being an advocate for us and with us as well. And once again, we thank you for coming on the show, and we're going to leave the fans with your song, Everybody Hurts.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
Good night. Night.
Everybody hurts. days, nights.